United States versus Barlow, and we'll hear from Ms. Brumley.
May it please the court. Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Abby Brumley, and I represent Charles Barlow, the appellant in this case. After a two-day jury trial, Mr. Barlow was convicted of two counts. The first count, using the internet to attempt to persuade, induce, or entice a minor to engage in sexual activity. And the second count, using the internet to intentionally transfer sexually obscene matter to a minor. Mr. Barlow appeals his conviction and sentence rendered in this case and raises three issues on appeal. The first issue, that the district court erred by denying Mr. Barlow's Rule 29 motion as to count one because the evidence was insufficient to support a conviction to that count. Count two, whether plain error resulted from the admission of the Yahoo chat log without establishing that the emails were unaltered and without establishing the chain of custody for those emails. And then lastly, count three, whether plain error resulted from the government's failure to adequately prove the interstate nexus element regarding any communications to or from Mr. Barlow's email account. The first issue, whether or not the district court erred in denying Mr. Barlow's Rule 29 motion. In order for Mr. Barlow to be found guilty of count one, the government must prove that Mr. Barlow completed a substantial step towards the crime. In this case, Mr. Barlow set up a meeting for July 10th, 2007 at 11 o'clock at a park in Mississippi. He set up this meeting with what he thought was a minor. Instead, it was a decoy. It was an FBI informant. He went to the meeting place. However, he left 30 minutes prior to the meeting time. He was then stopped by law enforcement after he had left the park. Now, this court has stated in U.S. versus Mendoano that mere preparation is not sufficient to be an attempt. There must be an overt act done towards the crime's commission. In this case, Mr. Barlow did not take that step.
How far did he drive to get to the park?
Your Honor, if I am correct, I believe that this park was near Hattiesburg, and he was coming from Lumberton, which is near Wiggins, near the coast. So I think it was probably about maybe an hour's drive. I'm not 100% sure about the exact location of where he lived.
And that's not a substantial step?
It's our position, Your Honor, that since he chose to leave, that then there was
You can unstep, but he had taken the step of driving an hour to the park where he had arranged the meeting.
It's our position, Your Honor, that even though he had driven, we don't know if he ever intended to actually stay and meet her. We don't know that.
Does it say he had to intend to take a step or he had to take a step?
It says that he had to take a substantial step towards the crime. Our position is that if you look at case law, this case is different than most cases. In most cases, there is a substantial step because, even though the meeting never happened, because the person gets there at the time that the meeting was supposed to occur and then is apprehended by law enforcement. Our position is that our case is different because the facts were different because he did, in fact, choose to leave prior to actually approximately 30 minutes to the meeting beginning. So our position is that that was not enough for a substantial step and that in fact he did not take that substantial step.
Well, what's the difference between being apprehended by law enforcement and seeing law enforcement on the scene and deciding to run? I don't see how you can distinguish the 11th Circuit case en route.
Well, Your Honor, our position is that the only evidence that he saw law enforcement was by the officer who testified at trial. He testified that he believed, it was his opinion, that Mr. Barlow saw him and that was the reason he departed. However, there's nothing to back that statement up. The officer went further to testify that Mr. Barlow, once apprehended, told the officer that he decided to leave, that he did not want to be there once the decoy, the minor, arrived, that he did not want to be there. So that's how we distinguish it between the 11th Circuit case.
Well, why would there be a rule requiring a substantial step if that wasn't sufficient? Why would getting cold feet, even if he hadn't seen the officer, why would that undo the taking of a substantial step?
It's our position, Your Honor, that that was just mere preparation, that actually him going there was just the preparation part, and that it has to be more than that. It has to be more than arranging. It has to actually go further. And the fact that the time element, that he actually left a good bit of time prior to when the meeting was scheduled to take place, is the reason why, or supports the reason why, that substantial step did not occur.
Well, the meeting was never going to take place because he wasn't meeting Becky.
That's
so what is your, how would you define substantial step?
I would define substantial, well, in a fact scenario, Your Honor.
In this identical case.
In this identical case, had he been there at the time the meeting was to take place? Had he been there and law enforcement apprehended him, that would have been a substantial step.
Why wouldn't that have been a completion?
Well, the substantial step, Your Honor, it's our position that the substantial...
Well, a step is something before completion.
Correct.
All right. He had done several steps. He had initiated the correspondence. He had prolonged the correspondence. He had made a time, place, date, and he, as the last of those four steps, and there may have been more, he had gone to the place in the approximate time. He just left before the exact time.
Your Honor, the step, it's our position that the step, that those were in fact all steps. We agree with the court that they were steps. However, to be a substantial step, it has to be more of a likelihood that it actually would happen, and more than just mere arrangement.
If he hadn't driven there for an hour to get to the place, it certainly wouldn't have happened. But having driven there in an hour or a half hour beforehand, then that is the penultimate substantial step.
And we recognize that, Your Honor. Actually, we still go back to the fact of the time element, and that he was, in fact, not...
I think we've pretty well explored that. Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
As to this issue, no, sir. May I move on to my second issue?
Yeah.
And issue number two is whether plain error resulted from the admission of the Yahoo chat log without establishing that the emails were unaltered or the chain of custody. This was a critical piece of evidence, admitting the chat log before the jury. There was no objection made by defense counsel regarding the admission of the chat log. The only way the chat logs were identified is by the decoy. She actually stated that they looked like the chat logs, looked like the communication between the two of them. There was no other, they were admitted, there was no objection, and that was the way they were admitted. There was no further questioning regarding if they were in fact correct, if they were in fact unaltered, if they were in fact in the same state they were when they were seized, where they actually came from. We don't know if these were the chat logs that if she printed them off, she being Miss English the decoy, as the conversation was going on, if the agent, the case agent in charge, was printing them off, or if they came from Mr. Barlow's computer. We don't know that. For a trial judge to admit physical evidence, he must be satisfied that the article hasn't been changed. There was no testimony put on whether or not these had actually been changed or not. There are certain factors that should be considered that were not considered in this case. The nature of the article, the circumstances surrounding the custody, and the likelihood of tampering. In this case, Ms. English testified to the chat log simply by looking at them, and that was as far as it went. On to our third argument, our last argument, is whether plain error resulted from the government's failure to adequately prove the interstate nexus element regarding any communications to or from Mr. Barlow's email account. The government must have federal jurisdiction for the two counts in this case. The government must have proven an interstate nexus. At trial, the government simply relied upon testimony from the FBI agent who basically stated that there were no Yahoo servers in the state of Mississippi, and that was it. That's how the government established. It's our position that that's not enough, that there has to...
Are you serious that you don't think the Internet is a means of interstate commerce?
We're not saying that we don't believe that it's a means of interstate commerce, but our position is that there needs to be further testimony other than just an agent stating that there...
If that's a fact he knows and it's not contradicted, no one presented evidence that there was a tower, a Yahoo tower or whatever.
That is correct, Your Honor, and there was no objection, and we do note that. I was not trial counsel, nor my office, but we have no knowledge as to why defense counsel did not raise an objection to that. But we believe that this coincides with the Tenth Circuit's case in U.S. versus Schaefer, where they ruled that we recognize in many, if not most, situations, the use of the Internet will involve the movement of communications or materials between states, but this fact does not suspend the need for evidence of this interstate movement. It's our position that this just wasn't enough, that there needed to be more testimony, further evidence that these did, in fact, move from one state to the other. And for those reasons, Your Honors, we ask this court to reverse the conviction and sentence rendered against Mr. Barlow.
Thank you, Ms. Brumley. You have some time reserved for rebuttal. We will hear from you then.
Thank you.
Mr. Cleveland?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I'm Gaines Cleveland with the Gulfport branch of the U.S. Attorney's Office. There was ample evidence for a reasonable jury to conclude that the defendant attempted to entice a child into having sex with him based on his persistent efforts to lure her into doing so. Barlow's extensive internet contacts, extending nearly a year of wooing and grooming her, were aimed at the objective of seducing her, a would-be child, into meeting him. He sent her graphic images of sexual acts that he wanted them to perform. He offered assurances to overcome her fears, promising he would teach her, that he wouldn't tell like boys her age ordinarily would, that he'd offer the protection of a condom, and he made specific plans to meet her. In the internet chat, Barlow repeatedly compliments her, telling her, "You look lovely, you look great." He promises to help her become a model. He tells her, "I would spoil you rotten." He tempts her with experiences he can offer. He offers to take a ride on his Harley. He promises to teach her how to make love, describing how he would pleasure her. "I will make you feel like you've never felt before," he says. "You'll feel like you're on top of the world. You'll love it." He offers her assurances to overcome her fears, as I mentioned, telling her, "I will use protection and I will not tell." And he constantly presses her about meeting, culminating in these plans to meet at the state park. These are all objective steps which, taken together, are strongly corroborative of his culpability. And they're all meet the definition collectively of acting to entice her, to allure or attract her by pleasure. And that's all before you get to his actually showing up at the time of the meeting, to the appointed time and place that they'd agreed upon. While he claims he left of his own accord, that's a self-serving statement on his part that the jury was not required to accept.
Does it matter?
It doesn't matter, Judge, in our view. He was there. He traveled the distance to show up. It was really too late for him to withdraw from this conduct. You can't unring the bell at that point. He had already, we think, completed an attempt under these circumstances. And he didn't voluntarily withdraw. The agent pulled up next to him for purposes of getting his tag. The operation, you know, had become overt at that point, but whether Barlow believed they were the police or not, he didn't want anybody around. He had said before he was afraid of getting caught with her, and he left. Obviously, changing his plans because of a likelihood of detection, which is what we believe happened here, that's not voluntarily withdrawing. And there's no doubt why he was there. He told the FBI agent he went there. Went there to meet a 15-year-old, and that what he did was wrong. As to the admission of the chat log without objection, the sponsoring witness had firsthand knowledge of the internet chat. She was fully qualified to authenticate the documents, the internet chat. She testified that she had examined the exhibit before court, and that
the record reflect whether she had made copies, contemporaneous copies, as they came in.
I know that they were saved within electronically. This was she had done this not as she basically would pose as an underage girl on these internet meeting sites. And then once she had someone that looked like they were willing to sort of engage her in the conversation, she would turn that over to the FBI. And so this ultimately was
saved on her computer and printed.
That's correct, Judge. Either hers or an FBI.
Were the printed ones that were submitted in evidence from her hard drive? Or?
I don't know that the trial record speaks to that specifically. I think it's fair to assume that they had to have come from her computer because they did not come from the defendant's computer in whole part. There was an FBI forensics expert who testified he examined that she examined the defendant's computer, and there were fragments of the internet chat, the most recent internet chat, still on the computer of the defendant. So all of the other internet chat came from the FBI informant's interaction with the defendant.
But what was the chain of custody for the printouts?
Well, it's not really. This isn't really, Your Honor, a chain of custody type situation. What's that?
That seems to be the objection.
It seems to be the objection, but I don't think it goes to the situation. We're talking about an authentication of a document as under 901, and you need a witness who has firsthand information that it is what it purports to be. She testified that it was a fair and accurate depiction of their internet chat. The defendant himself was confronted with this.
The context of the document.
What?
Of the content of the document.
Right, and
she was the other person in the chat.
Right, she was the person in the chat. She was directly participating in this, and she was asked whether it was a complete rendition of the internet chat, and she said that it was. As to this, the issue of the defendants using the facility of interstate commerce, this court in the Runyon case recognized that transmitting images via the internet is tantamount to moving them across state lines and is transportation in interstate commerce. And the statutes involved here in both Section 2422B and Section 1470 require even less of a showing. Both statutes refer to using a facility of interstate commerce. And as this court said in construing similar language in Section 1958 in this court's en banc Merrick decision, which Your Honor, Judge Wiener authored, it's the facility, not its use, that must be in interstate commerce. And there's no issue here that the internet was the means of communication. The jury also could fairly conclude that the defendant was using the internet part of the time from offshore. But there's a reference to him being offshore on an oil rig. And this, I'll just point out, part of Government Exhibit 1, page 83, the defendant and the decoy are chatting, and he's talking about explaining why he's been out of touch. And he says, in a lot of places I go, I cannot get online. Sorry. I go to other platforms in the Gulf that are not set up like it is here. So you have evident use of internet in a location that was remote from the would-be the would-be child. The trial court did not plainly err in admitting the challenged testimony. Unless there are further questions, we rely on our brief.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cleveland. Ms. Brumley, your rebuttal.
May it please the court. If I may start with what Mr. Cleveland ended with regarding Mr. Barlow's actual location, if he was in fact offshore or if he was in fact in Mississippi. That was never established before the jury. When the chat logs were gone through during trial, it was not distinguished where Mr. Barlow was at the time that he was sending each email or at the time that he was participating in the chats. That was not established. So it's our position that the court can't rely on that as far as creating interstate, since there was no evidence presented to prove that. As to the first issue regarding the substantial step, all of the things that happened that Mr. Barlow did during the chats with the emails, that those are in fact steps. However, it's our position that that was preparation. That is exactly what this court has said. When it's our opinion that when the court stated in U.S. versus Manduano and said mere preparation, which may consist of planning the offense or of devising, obtaining, or arranging a means for its commission, is not sufficient to constitute an attempt. That's exactly what all of those things that Mr. Cleveland talked about, all the issues that came up during the chats and the emails, that was mere preparation and not enough to be a substantial step. And as to the chat logs and them being admitted into evidence, Ms. English looked at the chat logs and said that they looked like the chat logs. They looked like the communication between the two of them. As Your Honor stated, there was no evidence presented as to where they even came from. It's our position that there was no evidence presented that these were, in fact, unaltered and accurate chats. And for those reasons, we urge this court to reverse.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Brumley. We have your argument. Take the case under submission. And